Christmas is only 19 days away, and that's good news for a lot of reasons. But the greatest news is that God came to earth in the form of his son, Jesus Christ, the greatest search and rescue mission ever engaged. Just that fact alone is all the reason any of us needs for real hope, real peace, real love, real joy this time of year. Today marks the second week of Advent, where the focus is on peace. Isaiah wrote, some 700 years before Jesus was born, "For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulders, and his name shall be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace." Whoever you are this morning, and wherever you are joining us here, that's the good news. God coming to earth, Emmanuel, secures our hope of heaven and gives us peace in the middle of turmoil. I wonder, do you know him? If you don't, please stay tuned until the end of this message today, because we're going to invite you to get to know Jesus Christ. My guess is that every one of us listening right now could stand to hear the message of peace on earth again. Yes, you there. Are you still home alone? Remember, we're talking about how to survive the holiday season when you're home alone. And this morning, I'm thinking of a scene from Home Alone where Kevin McAllister has just come to realize that his family is gone. All the rules and restrictions in his life suddenly are lifted. Now, imagine being 8 years old and having the run of the house. First thing he does is remember everything about his family members that he doesn't like. And it's followed by a dance of joy all around the house. Then he's jumping up and down on his parents' bed, eating popcorn, and then into his older brother's room, digging through all of his private stuff. Next, he's shooting a BB gun in the kitchen. And then that evening, Kevin is sitting in the TV room, eating a huge bowl of ice cream and junk and watching a fictitious old gangster movie, Angels with Filthy Souls, obviously not suitable for viewing. And as he sits watching, Kevin yells out to his non-existent family, "Guys, I'm eating junk and watching rubbish. You better come out and stop me." No one does. No one is there to stop him, even though later he wishes they were. Kevin in that scene reminded me of something that happens to us this time of year, and that is happening especially this year. It's not that all restraint and accountability suddenly goes away, but we certainly are faced with some changes, aren't we? How are you doing at handling Christmas 2020? What are you doing with the changed schedule, the time off, the changed expectations? Is this the most wonderful time of the year, or is this the most treacherous time of the year? Let me point out a couple of verses up front that I think need to be read this first Sunday of December 2020. Galatians 5:13, Paul said, "For you were called to freedom, brothers. Only do not use your freedom as an opportunity for the flesh, but through love, serve one another." And then Peter in 1 Peter 2, verse 16, "Live as people who are free, not using your freedom as a cover-up for evil, but living as servants of God." Both Paul and Peter are addressing the fact that finding yourself with freedom is a situation that's wonderful, and at the same time, potentially hazardous. Oh, it's a lot of fun to be free, but using it to fill ourselves with junk and rubbish has a price. There is a growing idea that freedom means no limits, no law, no authority, no personal responsibility. It's an 8-year-old with an entire house to himself, set free to do as he pleases, even if that includes hurting himself. I see that lived out in riots on the streets these past months. I've also seen it lived out in a more organized way with Christmas as a justification for it. I think the first time I realized that Christmas had some controversy with it was the first time I watched and really began to understand Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. Even as a boy, I could tell that there was an agenda to that story, trying to fix something about Christmas. What had happened to it? I could tell that in my lifetime, there had been a lot that had happened surrounding what we call Christmas. But, you know, since then, I have learned that the controversy of Christmas didn't just happen in my lifetime. Christmas has been a contested issue for centuries. From its very beginnings, the church didn't set aside a specific holy day in memory of only Jesus' birth. The adoption of December 25th wasn't based on the day of Jesus' birth. It was an adoption of an already existing pagan holiday. So Christians started a holiday and made it a celebration of something else, something good. By the Middle Ages, Christmas celebration largely had become something we wouldn't recognize. Now you have to try to imagine what life must have been like in medieval Europe. Poverty was the norm then. Once late November rolled around each year, harvest was done. It was the only time of year that slaughtering for meat could be done without having to preserve it. So there was an abundance of food that there wasn't any other time of the year. There's no field work to be done for many weeks, so it's not too surprising that it became a season of excess and what came to be called by many misrule. It was the season of the year that really contributed to people's behavior at the time. 1583, Philip Stubbs was writing about Christmas. He said, "More mischief is at Christmas time committed than all the year besides. What dicing and carding, what eating and drinking, what banqueting and feasting is then used to the great dishonor of God and the impoverishing of the realm." Puritanism rose up in England. The Puritans wanted to purify their society of all kinds of evils, including the wild activity that had come to surround Christmas time. So when a group of Puritans landed in the New World in 1620, they brought with them a pushback against Christmas. Those who were less devout made it the time of misrule like it had been in England. There was excessive drinking, loud, bizarre behavior, public misbehavior was excused. The rich were all but coerced into giving their best to the poor, or else. Kind of like the idea of trick-or-treating. 1659, the General Court of the Massachusetts Bay Colony made it a criminal offense to publicly celebrate Christmas and declared, "Whosoever shall be found observing any such day as Christmas or the like, either by forbearing of labor, feasting, or any other way, was subject to a 5-shilling fine." The restrictions stuck into the 1700s. In fact, by the time of the Declaration of Independence, Christmas wasn't widely celebrated in the colonies. Obviously, there was a change. Historian Ronald Hutton shows how the reconstruction of Christmas largely is a result of a revival of the holiday helped along by Charles Dickens, who, he said, linked worship and feasting within a context of social reconciliation. Dickens meant to impact the way people look at Christmas. In his will, he urged his children to guide themselves, he said, by the teaching of the New Testament in its broad spirit, and to put no faith in any man's narrow construction of its letter here or there. Read through A Christmas Carol and watch for the way that Dickens seeks to make Christmas something that reflects the spirit of Christ all over again. So a new movement emerged. Christmas became more Christ-focused, and it gained momentum. It was 1870, finally, when Congress proclaimed it a national holiday in the United States. And since then, with the help of a lot of songs, poems, movies, cards, a lot of marketing, a lot of traditions, we have what we have today. I thought it would be good to understand this morning that the need to sort through this season and what we do with it isn't something new. It's not new at all. You and I have some choices to work through. And if you'll think them through and make decisions about them now, they'll be less likely to be made for you by someone who doesn't have what's best in mind. I want to challenge us today to do a personal Christmas reset, to see what it's supposed to be and construct a right approach to all the good that this time of year can bring, because we can choose. We can choose between excesses that have nothing to do with worship of Jesus or deliberate reminders of God's extravagant gift to us. The Israelites had lived as slaves in Egypt for multiple generations, over 400 years. And with Moses to lead them, God led them out and to freedom. The Egyptians even handed over their gold to them as they were leaving. They crossed the desert, they crossed the Red Sea, and they camped out near Mount Sinai, where Moses climbed up to receive the Ten Commandments. Life had totally turned around for Israel, but they got tired of waiting on Moses. They built themselves an idol out of gold, and it says this in Exodus 32. When Aaron saw this, he built an altar before it. And Aaron made a proclamation and said, "Tomorrow shall be a feast to the Lord." And they rose up early the next day and offered burnt offerings and brought peace offerings. And the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Now, they weren't playing cards or frisbee golf. They took the good things that God had handed to them, and supposedly, in the name of worshiping God, they misused it all and indulged themselves. They said it was worshiping God, but it wasn't about God at all. It's quite possible to have a lot of celebration over these next 3 weeks without having it be about Jesus at all. Plenty of people have managed to make it that way. You can stress excessively, spend excessively, rest excessively, play excessively, and never even think about Jesus. You can eat junk and watch rubbish. There's more than you could possibly consume. Most people around you won't notice anything's wrong at all. There was a woman who brought a gift to Jesus. It was an expensive jar of perfume made of a pure aromatic oil called nard. It was worth over a year's wages. Nard number 5. And she knelt down before Jesus. She broke open that jar. She poured it out on Jesus from head to toe. Then she let down her hair and used her hair to wipe his feet. Now the people around her said something was wrong with that. That was too extravagant. Really? When you're giving a gift to Jesus, can anything be too extravagant? This year, you'll be making judgment calls about how much to spend on gifts for whom, and as you do that, can I encourage you to remember the point of all of it? What is it? If it's about the extravagant gift of life that came to earth through Jesus Christ, let's figure out ways to point to that. Who's receiving your greatest gift this year? Not just monetarily, but even bigger. Who's getting the most thought, the most creativity? Who are you trying to please the most? Who do you want to see delighting in what you give? We have a choice to make. We also can choose between stressing out or vegging out until you wish it was over, or making this a time for grateful worship for what the Lord has done for us. I find myself going two speeds, basically, this time of year, fast forward and stop. I wish there was a happy in between. There must be a better way. In 1983, a 61-year-old potato farmer in Australia showed up for the first Westfield Sydney to Melbourne Ultra Marathon, a distance of 544 miles. And though he changed into running clothes, Cliff Young showed up in his overalls and work boots without his dentures in because he said they rattled when he ran. Now, Young's age and appearance wasn't all that was unusual about him. He also had a strange way of running. He ran at a slow, loping pace that would become known as the Young Shuffle. And after the first day, he was way behind the pack. The other runners stopped for 6 hours, and Cliff kept running without stopping for 5 days, 15 hours, 4 minutes. He took the lead that first night, and he won 10 hours ahead of the next fastest runner. I guess you could say that Cliff Young knew how to pace himself, and it made him a legend. I admire somebody who's able to pace himself with a goal in mind, and as a result, finishes well. You could become a couch potato this time of year, especially when you can't go outside or out with your friends or out at all anymore. And if that's you, take a few minutes this week and try looking up the word sluggard to see how many times that gets used in the book of Proverbs and what it has to say about it. And then take a minute and consider Ephesians chapter 2, verse 10, where it says that we are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand that we should walk in them. God has prepared good things for us to do. But even ahead of that, he has created us to be something. Trying just to do is when we stress out because we'll never get everything done. I remember Leo Pirello used to pass out round tuits, you know, little round wooden coins that said to it on them, because of all the things that we say we're going to get done when we get around to it. Well, I had one of those, and I still didn't get everything done. There's really only one way to choose not to become a potato or to burn out, and that's to make time for being what God wants us to be, people who love him with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength. Listen to what God says in Psalm 46, verse 10. Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. You know, last Sunday, Brian and Heidi led us together here online in a different time of worship, a different way of worshiping. It's called Lectio Divina. That may have been a challenging change in some ways, but I really appreciated someone basically telling me, like Psalm 46:10 says, to be still. Well, here's someone telling you again this morning, set aside some of the downtime of this season and be still. God has been telling us that all along. Don't try to fill all of that time with Elf and the Grinch and sappy Hallmark movies. Decide to worship the King this Christmas, you who are home alone. We can choose that. We also can choose between getting all caught up in giving and receiving stuff or making it a time to share the joy of life in Jesus with someone who needs to be reminded of it. Now, this one is easy for me to say because I'm probably among the worst when it comes to figuring out what to give for gifts. And then after figuring it out, I take too long hunting, researching, and stressing before I finally hit the button, pull the trigger, seal the deal. I understand that exchanging gifts is a way we express our thoughtfulness to others. Believe me, I understand how receiving gifts can be a blessing too. But you and I, who know Jesus Christ, have a gift to share with people this time of the year and every other time as well. But this time, it seems especially shareable, and like many people, maybe will be open to receiving it. It's actually God's gift that He gave for everyone when Jesus came into the world. Paul is contrasting that with the gift that Adam gave us, you know, death. Ever since Adam and Eve chose to sin in the Garden of Eden, death has been hung over our heads. But Jesus came into this world to undo that. And Paul's talking about it in Romans 5 when he says, "The free gift is not like the result of that one man's sin. For the judgment following one trespass brought condemnation, but the free gift following many trespasses brought justification. For if because of one man's trespass, death reigned through that one man, much more will those who receive the abundance of grace and the free gift of righteousness reign in life through the one man, Jesus Christ." That's the great news of Christmas, that we get to share with people. We can choose to share that great reason for our joy with people this year, or we can spend all of our energy trying to decide which scarf to buy for them. Well, go ahead and get the gray scarf, but then give it with a message that says, "I care about you. I care enough to give you what I have. I have found life in Jesus, and I want you to have it too." You, home alone, are you listening? You, eating junk and watching rubbish, I want you to have life in Jesus too. That's what Christmas is really about every day of the year. It's just that today, right now, you've been listening to this message, and right now, you have a choice to make. Will you please choose to get in touch with me or with any of our staff here at Central Christian Church? Just use this information up on the screen. Let us help you through some next steps to becoming a follower of Jesus.